I'm going to move to our last talk from Brent Alschlager, who's going to tell us about the technical keys to successful fund application revision.
Okay, thank you very much, and it's really a pleasure to speak on this great panel today. I always love bringing up the rear late in the afternoon, so thanks to everyone for hanging in there. I have one disclosure, and that is that I did participate in a study many years ago on hiatal hernia repairs that was funded in large part by Cook, but that was about a decade or more ago, but I will talk a little bit about that. Revisional fund application is a very difficult operation. If I was to stand up here and try to educate a novice on how to do this, it would probably take a year. That's what we spend, at least with our fellows, and trying to get up to speed. So I'm going to try to break it down to some essentials, if you will, and maybe we can get to some finer points in the discussion period. I first want to concentrate a little bit on why they fail, because I think that with any operation, especially that is reconstructive in nature, it's important to know why it failed in the first place if you're going to revise. The most common mechanisms of failure have been reported to be a recurrent hiatal hernia, first and foremost. And I would put malconstruction of the fund application as a reasonably close second, because in the hundreds of anti-reflux operations that I've revised, they are often jointly together, at least in some degree or another. They're occasionally probably related to obesity or perhaps the wrong original operation. But contrary to at least historical popular belief, I think that they are rarely because a surgeon does it too tight or that the wrap used to be in good place and it somehow fully disrupted. They may stretch with time. This is native tissue, but I've never seen a fund application that is actually pulled apart. If you look at the study from Dan Smith and his colleagues when I think he was at Emory, looking at the patterns of failure, you will see this represented with the hiatal hernia being the most common cause. But you see slipped, twisted, and misplaced wrap. I think these are all usually malconstruction aspects. When do we redo hiatal hernias? Well, there should be rare, if nearly never, acute herniations that happen in the first week to 10 days. I consider all those emergency operations, and those should be redone immediately because you don't know how severe that incarceration is going to be. Almost all of the rest of the hiatal hernias present insidiously, and they usually can be managed electively. Volvulus is not usually an issue. Now, some people have presented relatively obstructed, but that is usually an evolution over months, if not years, and not over minutes, hours, and even days. And you think you need to understand the symptoms, anatomy, and physiology. I'm not going to go through a full evaluation. You can take some of the points that were discussed earlier, but I think that you, even more so than a first-time operation, and I would say the same is true for a first-time operation, you should thoroughly evaluate a patient and understand exactly what is going wrong to the best of your ability, because your threshold should be higher to reoperate on these patients than with a first-time operation. Now, I could spend some time trying to go through a redo operation, as I have here over a even truncated to 5-6 minutes of a talk. So let me just hit a few high points, because some of the technical aspects of just getting the thing down are worth talking about, but I'm not going to spend too much time. The first thing is come in and usually have to take the stomach somewhat off the liver. I do that with energy because the stomach's thick, the liver bleeds, and usually if you get a plane with electrical energy dissection, you can get the stomach off pretty easily. Then you get to the hiatus, and my fellows and residents are always asking me, what's wrong with the funduplication? Is it, you know, and I say, I don't even look at the funduplication, what's wrong with it, till I've dissected out everything at the hiatus. I just dissect the hiatus off of every other piece of tissue right at the edges, get up into the mediastinum and get the whole thing down and mobilize the esophagus before I even try to start looking at the construction of the funduplication, because you have to do that anyway. And if you start trying to take it down, I find it's difficult. Let me just move on. And I'm going to focus the rest of the talk on the short esophagus, treatment of the crura, and the funduplication construction. Now, you could say these are the key components to a first-time operation. I would agree with that. But there is if that's the key components to the first-time operation, it's going to be the second or third. The first thing is esophageal mobilization, the short esophagus, something we always like to talk about. I think if you're going to undertake these operations, you have to be extremely comfortable with these two things. The vast majority of the time, you're going to do extensive esophageal mediastinal dissection to get enough esophageal length, and this is going to be all that you need. But occasionally, you're going to run into a situation where you're going to need to do a collis or wedge gastroplasty, as being shown on the bottom right. I think this is the easiest method to perform over a bougie, where you just take a superior wedge and gain some length. So know how to do these procedures before you undertake these operations. So then what are we going to do about the hiatus? Well, obviously what we'd like to do initially is just close it. This is the easiest thing to do. And in most cases, in a revisional operation, the hiatus will close. I tend to, these days, close most, even large paraesophageal hernias primarily without mesh. Mostly because, as I'll show in a second, I did a study that showed mesh wasn't very helpful long term, so I feel a little sheepish when residents and fellows ask me why I'm putting mesh when I showed that it didn't really help. But so that we know is good but not great. And often, especially in redo operations, the hiatus, the muscle gets scarred, it's stiff, and it's even less likely to come together. And in the back of your mind, you're going, why was there a recurrent hiatus and hiatal hernia in the first place? Do I need to do something extra to get this hiatus closed? So you can close under tension, you can add mesh, you can do relaxing incisions, and maybe even create a pneumothorax. You have potentially other tricks at closing the hiatus. You can use simple sutures, mattress sutures, other suturing mechanisms. You can use pledgets. You can lower the abdominal pressure. You can put anterior sutures. I mean, well, you could probably go on and on. Most of the things on this page have never been well studied or proven, especially versus another method. But you can get lots of opinions on it. You can close it primarily in buttress with biologic mesh. I'm a big advocate that I never put synthetic mesh at the hiatus. Some people will do it with relaxing incisions. Certainly don't ever bridge a gap. And there are different ways you can put it. I don't ever put it circumferentially. Don't keyhole it, because you don't want the mesh all the way around. When it fibroses, it will stricture the esophagus. You can either do it as a U like this, or I've moved a little bit more towards a C, where I leave the little space on the left crura open. I can't tell you that one method is better than the other. I alluded to this earlier, and as did Dr. Louis, showing that in the short run, mesh seems to help in large paraesophageal hernias. and long-term, it seems to even out. This was with old mesh, and a lot of people say, well, the mesh is better now, but yet there are very few long-term, if any, long-term studies proving that newer meshes are better. But I think that there's a general sense, going back to one of my first points, is that if something failed the first time, what are you going to do differently to fix it the next time? And I will admittedly have a much lower threshold to use mesh in reoperative cases. Well, what about this case where it's a difficult dissection, the hiatus is quite stiff, and you go to try to get the crura together, and they really aren't going to come together. That's when I think you go to a relaxing incision. Preference, I think, of most surgeons is the right side, as long as you have enough right crura between the edge and the cava to leave yourself a little bit to sew to. You can do this by going just through the muscle and leaving that retrocrural fat and stay out of the pleura, so you don't have to create a pneumothorax. Some people like to create the pneumothorax, give some billowing of the hiatus to allow even less tension of the hiatus coming together. When I do this, I usually just cover the whole thing with a piece of biologic mesh. I usually turn it with a C to the side again, as I just described, with the opening to the pointed to the patient's left. Other people think that you should put a piece of synthetic mesh over that defect away from the esophagus, and perhaps further bolster the rest of the hiatus, the closed hiatus, with a biologic. Again, lots of debates. This is from Steve DeMeester's paper several years ago, and I put it up here because he describes both a right and left incision to the hiatus, if with his preference being the right, but in some rare cases needing to do a radial incision of the left diaphragm to allow the crura to come together. Dr. Louis' group described several years ago of creating a pneumothorax and had a nice way of even going in and measuring the tension of the hiatus. This is something we've tried to repeat as a great idea, but is difficult to do, and I think we still questionable what the relevance of the information, when at what tension, even if we can measure it, should we be doing something different, like creating a pneumothorax or putting mesh, so on and so forth. Actually, I have a pet theory that it's not necessarily the people that are hard to close, but might even be the people who are easy to close, who have this very stretchy, pliable tissue that is going to predispose that hiatus from stretching postoperatively, that could even be at higher risk. So bottom line is, I don't know when to use mesh, to use relaxing incisions and otherwise, but currently it seems like the best thing we know is that if it's hard to close, consider using some adjunct technique. And the final big topic is the fundal application. I think this is the most underappreciated contributor to a symptomatic hernia, and I've been a little bit on a bandwagon over the last few years talking about this, because what I see more times than not when I go to reoperate for a recurrent hernia is that, yes, the hole is slightly too large, but in many cases, the hole is not that large, but the hernia looks big on upper GI endoscopy and symptomatically. Well, what has happened is that there was a very redundant fundal application that was created, and when you have that hiatus, which we've already shown is predisposed to stretching over time, and you have a lot of redundant fundus sitting behind the esophagus, and then it's exposed to a negative pressure from the mediastinum, that's what's going to get sucked up. And you can get a fair amount of fundal application back there, sucked up, stretches, dilates, pushes on the esophagus, and either gives recurrent reflux, dysphagia, or both. And This was described many, many years ago by our group, where type 1A hernias, which is a well-constructed fundoplication that just migrates up, which is usually asymptomatic, is the most, maybe the most common thing. I think that we perhaps early in our experience overestimated these. And the rest are some form of perhaps malconstruction of the fundoplication, from minimal to more severe types. We'll run through this video real quick. We try to combat this by being very fastidious and put that marking stitch that you see 3 centimeters from the gastroesophageal junction, 2 centimeters from the greater curvature on the posterior fundus, and try to grab right there a mirror image of the anterior fundus, so the greater curvature is coming right in between, and then moving a little bit to fashion it to the size of the esophagus based on the patient. But this keeps the fundoplication on the fundus. And what I do when I'm doing this video, one day I just said, well, we got a little extra time. Let's just start grabbing further and further down, making it quote unquote looser and looser. And I would argue when you bring it together at the end, it very pretty much looks the same. Okay, and for years and years, surgeons sat up on podiums like this and said, the biggest problem with the fundoplication is creating dysphagia. All you gotta do is make a floppy Nissen. All you gotta do is make it floppier. And it's true, that will avoid some short-term dysphagia, but I think it also has caused many longer-term recurrent hernias that are much more symptomatic. Because those hernias, those loose fundoplications do not migrate like that type 1A hernia that I showed earlier. Certainly the outcomes of redo fundoplication are much worse than we see with primary fundoplications, emphasizing that the first time is their best chance of getting it right. And going back to that study that Dan Smith did many years ago, every time you get to it, so if you're there the second time, the third time, even in their case, the fourth time, the less likely you are to be successful. And in my opinion, you had about 2 or maybe 3 shots at this. If you see a patient who's had 3 anti-reflux operations, hiatal hernia repairs, the likelihood of gaining a durable control of the hiatus, I think, is minimal and probably not worth undertaking it. And you probably need to consider, if you can't do medical, can't keep them on some sort of medical regimen, consider resection, because a gastric bypass, as we've already heard, is a good potential solution for anybody with reflux, and that doesn't require, or it doesn't rest as significantly on the hiatal repair or the integrity of the fundus to stay intact. So in conclusion, I think a well-constructed hiatal hernia repair and fundoplication that are recurrent in that setting, a hiatal hernia is going to be the usual mode of failure, okay? Prevention is the key with the aspects that I talked about. And when you see someone with a recurrence, don't rush to do it unless it's an early recurrence. Be very thoughtful, more thoughtful than perhaps if it's possible than you might have been with someone without an operation. Be sure that you are the right person to do it. Don't take your ego into this, because they're difficult operations, the complication rates are higher, and it may be really, frankly, the last shot that they have. Keep some of the things that I've talked about in mind. Know some tricks like relaxing incisions and lengthening procedures. Treat the obesity if it exists. And remember, at some point, if we go down this line, we're going to have to resect. Thank you very much.